Hi, Ace.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Jeff. I just got your message.
Hey, Jeff. What's going on?
How are you? Not too much. I just want to apologize for the other night. I didn't think it was, like, too late. I figured it was 11:30.
Yeah, I mean, we got kids, and, you know, we go to bed pretty early around here.
Yeah, well, the reason I...
Once upon a time, I was up all hours, you know, playing clubs and that sort of thing, but...
Yeah, you've learned how to be an adult now.
Well, kicking and screaming.
Kicking and screaming. Yeah, the reason I had called that day was because I had received an email from one of the girls that had taken the video of the plane, and she had said that she was going to call me the following day, and I was just trying to get as many people as I could to talk to see what I should be asking her and stuff, like if anybody had any ideas of what questions to ask her.
Well, who is it?
That Jennifer Spell girl.
Okay, now which video is hers?
She took the one that goes through the fence. Like, she's behind the fence, and she, like, zooms in through the little metal thing in the fence there, and she gets the plane going in.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that one in quite a while. I remember it, though. It's kind of from the northwest of the towers, if I'm not mistaken. Looking southeast. I think that's right. I haven't seen that one in a long time, but I remember that one. It's like looking through and it sort of zooms. Yeah,
she gets it just in time for the plane to go in, so she zooms in. But I had talked to her a couple days before for like almost 3 hours, and she had started emailing me, and she went and checked out the website and stuff like that. But she hasn't called me back yet. She was supposed to call me again today. She hasn't called yet either.
Right.
So I don't know what.
I think the first thing to ask, you know, any of these people is, can I have a copy of the original quality footage? You know, I mean, what, you know, ask her what format did she shoot on? You know, was it a camcorder? What was it? Most likely, the most common kind of a camcorder. Hang on a second. I'm helping my daughter with homework right now. Hold on.
Did you want?
No, it's okay. It's okay. Oh, that's really good. Okay, yeah, that's right. Okay, all the words that end with X. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. Okay, do you have any more homework? You done? Okay. Oh, you want to go watch TV? Okay, I'm back. Yeah.
Hey, would it be? Do you want me to call you maybe later on, or
would
it be better?
A fairly good time. I got my little one, and she's finishing up her homework, and hopefully she's going to go watch some TV and chill out for a little while. But that's the thing to ask them, first of all, is can I please get an original quality copy of what you shot? You know, not YouTube, not a flash video, but an uncompressed, you know, high quality copy of the video. And that would be really a good place to start because,
Well, that was. There's a funny thing about that too. Is like out of all the emails that we were back and forthing with, the one time when I asked her, I sent her an email. I said, "I have one more question. Would it be possible to get a copy of your footage?" And she still hasn't answered that one yet. So she
kind of dismissed
that one.
You know why? That's the thing. You know, as you well know, I contacted Fox 5, you know, half a year ago, and tried to license their Chopper 5 footage, and it's like, no way. I've now offered them $100,000 for a copy of that footage. You know, same thing, you know, Evan Fairbanks, kind of the same thing. You know, the Evan Fairbanks footage that appears in, which DVD is it? I think it's In Memoriam.
Yeah.
Decent quality, but if you look at the Evan Fairbanks footage in that DVD compared to the other footage that's right before it and after it, that Evan Fairbanks footage looks lower quality, like they reduced it in quality before they put it into the DVD. And of course, that's the easiest way to hide stuff. You know, that's the easiest way to hide compositing, to hide digital effects, is to do the whole effects sequence in the highest quality that you possibly can, but then reduce the whole thing, the whole final result, reduce the quality of that, and then put it out. You know, because if you're compositing, if you're putting two images together, chances are the original source footage is going to be at one quality, whereas the, let's say, the airplane image that you overlay into it is going to be at a slightly different quality. And so the easiest way to, and if you just put those two together, you can see the quality differences between the, those two images. So the easiest way to fix that is to do the whole thing and then reduce the quality of the whole output. So that's what I think they did with a lot of these videos. And so, you know, that'd be something I'd ask her.
She had, well, that's the thing. She had said, okay, she took the video on a Sony DV1000, DX1000 video camera, which is a pretty good video camera at the time.
Uh-huh.
It was on mini DV tape or whatever, normal DV tape, she said.
Right.
And she said when the FBI came to her house, they were really interested in that third plane, like the white elephant that everybody calls.
Right.
But she didn't, they didn't say anything about it. And she said that she cut them a VHS copy of the tape. Like, I would imagine the FBI would take the original tape, no? She says she has the original tape locked away somewhere.
Okay. Well, you know, yeah, I certainly the FBI, if they were doing a real investigation, would either want the original tape or a high-quality digital copy of the original tape. And certainly they're smart enough to know that a VHS it reduces the quality, especially the horizontal resolution is about half on a VHS. So, you know, that's a little fishy both ways. I mean, I just, you know, if the FBI is really going to do an investigation, they're going to want the highest quality that they can get, for sure.
Yeah, I found that kind of odd that they would just get a VHS copy.
For sure.
And she said, when I was asking her about stuff, she kept saying that she never touched her footage, she never doctored it in any way. Said she had gave it to that Steve Rosenbaum guy, the guy from 7 Days in September, and if anybody had did anything to her footage, it would have been him. But she swears...
Now, when was that? I don't know any of this stuff. So she said she gave it to that guy when?
Like 4 or 5 days after September 11th. Like, he was the guy that did 7 Days in September, and he's from Camera Planet, the Camera Planet guy.
Right, okay. And, okay, that guy, yeah. He's got, like, 30,000 hours or something. He's got, like, a huge archive of stuff. Now, and then, so does she say that she watched her footage in that time, in those 7 days? Does she say she watched it? Or?
Yeah, she said that she had looked at it before she gave it to Steve Rosenbaum and that she definitely saw a plane there. But she said when she was videotaping it, she was looking through the viewfinder, and she had looked through the viewfinder and saw the explosion out of her other eye. But she never really said she saw the plane. But she said she heard a plane going out over New Jersey and come back in.
Hmm.
And that was kind of strange, too.
Yeah, very. Hang on a second, Jeff. It'll be just like 1 second. Yes, a little one. Yeah. I better? I'm back.
But out of the whole conversation talking to her, like, she had almost convinced me, well, she basically did convince me there at the start, like after I got off the phone with her, that she saw a plane go into the building. And then I started thinking, what's the only other possibility? And I started playing around with the hologram thing again. But, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, holograms, it's not possible. There are holograms, of course, for a long, long time. But holograms require some sort of a medium to project them onto. It has to be like a semi-transparent piece of film. There has to be something to reflect the light back to your eyeball. They cannot project any kind of 3D images or 2D or any kind of images up into thin air without something to reflect the light back towards your eyeball or towards the camera. I am absolutely convinced that there was no flying object of any kind. It's the only thing that makes any kind of sense to me. If you were planning this trick, we're going to convince everybody that there were airplanes, and either you got to use real planes, and I think a number of people, including Jared Holmgren and Killtown, have done a good job of explaining why they would never use real planes. They're just not dependable enough. You couldn't guarantee the penetration. You know, it just a real plane would basically explode on the side of that tower. Or you've got to use video compositing and have nothing, because if there's anything else flying through the air, a missile, UAV, Global Hawk, A3 Sky Warrior, anything at all, the chances are somebody's going to see it. In fact, a lot of people are going to see it, photograph it, video it. Whereas if there's nothing flying through the air, well, how do you take a picture of nothing? You can't. Yeah, it's possible that somebody could be videotaping the tower and then it explodes and there's no plane there. But first of all, there's going to be way less of those than there would be if there were some flying object to attract attention. And that, you know, if somebody did happen to videotape the exploding tower, which I think there were a few of those, that can be explained away or dealt with. I think the you're familiar with the Bob and Bree What We Saw video.
Yeah.
I'm sure they recorded what happened when the second tower exploded, but in their video it's edited out. That's the easiest thing. The perps got to them, co-opted them, you know, offered them whatever, explained it however they explained it, and just cut that part out. It's pretty simple.
Where their explanation was is they had turned off the video camera and then turned it back on when they saw the explosion.
You know, which, oh, okay, and I have no way to prove that's false, but I've given a great deal of thought along the lines of, okay, if I was doing this, how would I do it? What problems would I have? And I just have tremendous problems with any kind of flying object, because there just would be lots of people taking pictures or videos of it. Whereas if there's nothing, if there's no flying object, then anybody who is there looking at it and says, you know, like David Hanshew, like Don Daler, like the other, that bald guy that's underneath the tower, like Winston Mitchell, like the Middle Eastern guy, and like a bunch of other people that we have on video that we've all seen who say the tower just exploded, well, you just explain that away. Dude missed it.
Yeah.
Missed it. It went too fast. He missed it. You know, it doesn't matter how many of those people there are, they're going to explain that away as, he just missed it. You know, and if there was somebody who refused to cooperate, who videotaped that, I know what they would have done. You know, they would have said, oh, this person actually is a terrorist. They recorded the real plane and they erased the real plane. And then what the perpetrators would do is they would quick stick a composited plane into their footage, and then they would claim that that was the real footage, and this bad person actually erased the plane. He's a terrorist. They'd put him in jail. They'd shut him up. You'd never hear from him, and they would, like, find computer equipment in their apartment, and, you know, that would be the end of it. I don't think they had to do that, but that's, I don't know, that's the only thing that makes sense to me. I don't know about Jennifer, you know, I don't know.
Like,
no, I don't know.
And as far as your conclusions with looking at the videos, have you verified to yourself that there's different trajectories of the plane? Or?
That is a very tough question to answer. Of course, you know, that we have the CBS dive bomber shot, which is shot from north looking south, almost on a straight line, and it shows that airplane coming down at a pretty steep angle and then leveling off and coming in. Whereas, say, for example, the Park Forman video, which is shot from the east looking west, shows a pretty level, very level, not pretty level, very level trajectory.
Yeah.
I actually have not gone, and what you'd want to do is synchronize, say, the CBS dive bomber and Park Forman frame by frame, make sure we got the same frame rate going on, and step back some number of frames. But you also have a problem of perspective, because looking along that same line, like from the north looking south, along the line of that path, is going to exaggerate any vertical change that occurs. I mean, you know, a couple hundred feet drop in altitude would look very dramatic looking straight on at it, whereas looking at the side, it might not look as dramatic. It just wouldn't. However, I think you could measure that. I think you could count pixels and measure that, and I have not done that, and I think that would be a great study for somebody to do, because just eyeballing it, I look at that, the CBS dive bomber shot, and it's like, wait a minute, it's like coming way down and then leveling off, and then the other ones, almost all of the other ones show it pretty level.
Yeah, that one CBS one seems to contradict everything else, yeah.
It totally does. But I admit I have not yet, and in fact, I'm glad you bring that up, because I want to go and count back pixels, because it might be that the CBS one is from earlier in time, and whereas like Park Foreman might not catch that particular point in time. I'm not sure. I just would have to count frames and see what kind of time we're talking about. The only reason I hesitate on that kind of thing is because it doesn't seem like the kind of mistake they would make. How I'm pretty sure they did it is they created a single flight path in a program like Lightwave 3D or some high-end 3D animation program, which have been around for a long time. You can create one flight path and say, okay, here's the plane, it comes in here, it banks like this, it does that. Then you can render out that video from any virtual camera position. And I'm sure they had many camera positions scouted ahead of time and guys planted, like Hezer Khani and the various news choppers, I'm sure were very, very much positioned to pre-planned places. But other ones might have come in, you know, and could be rendered after the fact. But the notion that they would give conflicting flight paths just seems like an amateur kind of mistake, and we know that we were dealing with pros. You know, so just off the top of my head, I'm like going, no way. They would never screw that up. No way. No way. That's too easy. But I admit I haven't done the thing, you know. And who knows, you know.
The only thing I had seen was where in Genghis's video there, 9/11 Taboo, where he has the dive bomber shot compared with a straight-on shot, and it still seems that he's got the arrows going, and it's still diving when the other one's going perfectly straight.
You know, and they made other mistakes, too. I mean, there's no question in my mind that when you compare Hezer Khani with Fairbanks, that the damn puffball is below the wing in Hezer Khani, and it's above the wing in Fairbanks. This is the left wing, and I've looked at it. I've taken on all arguers, including Anthony Lawson, and they are not consistent. And, you know, it could be that they made human mistakes, but it could also be that the guys who were doing this wanted to leave us clues. You know, that they, you know, the actual compositors, the compositrators were, you know, wanted to leave us clues. They were not the ones ultimately in charge. And, you know, Who knows? Or maybe they just screwed up a little bit. You know, it's absolutely possible. These are human beings. And, you know, I know for sure of three big mistakes that were made on 9/11 that are the clues that that led to a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, that we need to look at. And, I mean, the three big mistakes that I know of are, of course, number one, Chopper 5. We were never supposed to see the wide shot. They were supposed to zoom in the first place. There's no airplane in that wide shot. It absolutely would appear. It's not there. they accidentally let the nose of the airplane image pop out the backside. It is the nose of an airplane. There's nothing else it could be. It makes perfect sense. That's exactly the kind of problem that you will have in compositing if you let the thing go too far, and the fade to black and all that. And the second mistake they made was showing us molten metal pouring out of the South Tower just before they blew it up. We were never supposed to see that. They were supposed to keep that inside the building. And that's what led to the whole Judy Wood versus Stephen Jones Scholars for 9/11 Truth debate about molten aluminum and all this nonsense. And it's what led to both of those two people, Stephen Jones and Judy Wood, both destroying the case for molten metal, each in their own way. And the third mistake that they made was having Philip Hayton and James Stanley announcing the, quote, collapse of Building 7 20 minutes before it happened. That was not supposed to happen. So those were the big three. But, you know, they may very well have screwed up the trajectory on that. And I think Genghis is legit and for real, and I want to go and try to do that same kind of study myself.
And, like, the whole thing about, this whole thing with Simon Chak and stuff lately, obviously you stand on it, there's not all, the whole city's not fake and CGI kind of thing, there's kind of no point in having to do that, all the layering stuff that they're fighting about these days.
Right, that's, in my opinion, that's nonsense and disinformation. There's no reason to have animated the whole city, and B, as far as I know, it's not possible. Now, we can always think about, what if the government has technology that we're not even aware of? And that could basically allow for anything. You know, you can imagine anything. But whereas weapons, nuclear weapons and so forth, it's not legal for private people to develop weapons or to possess nukes or energy weapons or any of this kind of stuff. But that's not true about animation technology. People can have whatever kind of computers and software and animation technology that they want. As far as I know, Hollywood and the people that make movies and television shows have the absolute best state-of-the-art animation and video compositing technology that's available. And as far as that technology, I know what the state-of-the-art is. I know what's possible, and I also know what's not possible. I know what's easy, and I know what's difficult, and I know it's impossible. And it is, although there are 3D animations, and you could absolutely animate a city skyline like New York, it would not be indetectable. You would look at it, and you'd go, oh, that looks pretty cool, but it looks like a video game. It looks like a high-end video game is about the best we can get. And people know what video games look like, and the kind of problems that Simon Chak and Fred BS Registration and Killtown and Web Fairy and Nico and these people are pointing to, there's missing buildings, they say, and there's shifting bridges, and there's moving buildings, and there's missing sky, missing backdrops and so forth. Actually, if this was some kind of 3D animation, like a video game, these are the exact opposite kind of problems that you would have. There is 3D animation, and again, the best example is like high-end video games, like Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, yeah, my friend had just got CNN America Remembers in the mail the other day, and we were watching it on the weekend, and he was sitting there going, like, look at this Hezer Connie footage. It almost looks like a computer game or a cartoon or something.
Well, when the plane goes in, it looks fake because there's no physics. On the plane itself, you don't see anything breaking. You don't see really any part of the plane breaking off or changing direction or slowing down or anything. And same with the building. You never see any part of the building breaking inwards or breaking away or whatever. That's why it looks fake. As far as the scenery, it doesn't look fake at all. It looks exactly like video. The building looks real. The trees look real. The sky looks real. The other buildings look real. Everything looks real. And with 3D animation, what 3D animation gets correct is the three-dimensional placement and movement of things. You can move virtual cameras around all you want, and the objects will always be in the right place, and they'll always have the right proportions and the right perspective, and all of that mathematics is always exactly correct.
Like, do you think, is it possible if they had real footage, like, say, for instance, the Hezer Connie shot, could they put that into a computer and shift the perspective just a bit to get the shot, like, the photo like Carmen Taylor? Is that possible, you think? Shifting perception or perspective with real footage?
Yeah, you could take it. You could. There's two answers to that. If you mean perspective, like changing the relationship between the foreground and the background. Maybe.
Or just like, so you would like be able to take a picture and then take the, like, have the footage in a computer. Move the view over to the left a bit and take another picture, but the whole thing would.
If you had footage, say like the Hezer Connie shot, and you wanted to try to take one frame of that and make the Carmen Taylor shot, you would want to distort the. You'd want to stretch it. Basically, you could sort of fake that. By stretching, you'd want the face of the towers to be a little bit skinnier, and you'd want the sides of the towers to be a little bit more, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I suppose you could take and stretch and distort that, and then you'd want the foreground, you'd want to isolate the foreground, the trees and all that stuff, and the other buildings, and isolate all that stuff out and shift it over a little bit more, but
you wouldn't be able to, like, make it so you could see, like, if you moved over enough, you'd be able to see the spaces between the buildings. If you couldn't see it on the real footage, you wouldn't be able to move.
Well, it depends. If you were starting with a model, okay, if you somehow were starting with a three-dimensional model of the whole thing, the buildings, the trees, and everything, then you can shift around and go around any which way you want to go.
Yes.
If you're starting with video, that is two-dimensional video like we know of, you shoot from your video camera, you would be an enormous, enormous task, and you'd still be faking it. You'd be shifting things over, you'd be filling in and cloning here and stretching this and squishing that, and I highly, highly doubt they did anything like that. Far, far more likely is that Michael Hezer Connie or whoever shot that footage and Carmen Taylor or whoever shot that photograph were actually standing side by side.
Yeah.
What's so hard to think about that? Whether they were like on the very tip of Manhattan or maybe out on a ferry boat, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were standing 10 feet apart or something. That's not so hard to imagine.
No, I guess no, that's true, But they would still put that plane in both videos. Or the video would still be just...
Well, exactly. They have a single flight path that's rendered in Lightwave, and then the first task is, okay, where is this person standing? So they have a model that looks like a beautifully rendered airplane, and then just wireframe, just cheap representations of the Twin Towers and a few other things, the coastline of Manhattan and, the streets are just lines or whatever. That's not going to show up, but that's enough to place. Okay, I was on 67th and Broadway or whatever. Okay, boom, you can just locate that person in the model right there, put the virtual camera right there, then, okay, the plane's going to look like this. Then you can, and then everything else goes away, and you only get the plane, and then that plane will match that particular video or that particular photograph. And it's not, you know, once you have that and once you know where the person is, it's doable. It's absolutely doable, and it's doable quickly.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah, there was only, like, what, three live shots, like you were saying, before you, if you categorize them between...
That's a good question. As far as I know, too, Chopper 5 and Chopper 7, the big question mark is NBC4. Now, I'll tell you why. That shot, first of all, it's from the helicopter was very high, sort of looking down, pretty long distance. I don't know, it was quite a few miles away. One version of that I've seen barely shows any plane. There's like a little dot that you see, and Simon Shack calls it the missile path. But another version, you know, shows a plane cleared up. It's still small, but it's definitely more clear than the other version.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about the NBC shot is that it wobbles. Unlike now, Chopper 5 and Chopper 7 are stable. There's no zooming, no panning, no nothing. So compositing onto those in real time is pretty much a piece of cake, unless you let the nose of the airplane pop out the back side. But just doing it is a piece of cake. If the camera is moving and wobbling like it was in the NBC shot, it's actually not possible to do live compositing onto that. You can composite onto it, but before you do, you have to track the whole motion of the camera to understand what motion the camera is doing, then apply that motion to the plane so that the motion of the plane follows the motion of the camera so that it looks right. What I think that NBC shot had no plane of any kind whatsoever in it ever, and then somebody put a plane into it, and there are various versions, various qualities that have emerged. But I will.
Yeah, because the ladies that were.
Go ahead.
The ladies that were in the chopper, if there was a Boeing 767, they would have seen it, right?
I think so. I mean, there's all kinds of people from the chopper pilots and to all kinds of people on the street who
those ladies in the chopper, they say whatever they say, it appears to be another explosion. Yes, it appears to be another explosion. They never mentioned the airplane.
And the thing is that you know, communications are instantaneous. And that plane would have been picked up, you know, just visually, even hearing it, you know, 10 seconds before, and seeing it, you know, 20 seconds before. On radar, the guys would have had it on radar the whole way. I mean, for minutes and minutes and minutes before that.
Yeah, like,
there's no way that they all missed it. There's just no way. From what you can hear to what you can see, there was supposedly coming in on a straight path, going straight northeast, right at those towers, for minutes. Coming up for minutes. And there's just no possible way that they all didn't see it, didn't hear it, didn't track it on radar, didn't have it. This is no way.
Yeah, like Kay Simonson, like, he would have definitely been able to see it before it hit the tower. He would have had enough time to zoom right in on it while it was flying through the air on its way to the tower.
Poor Kai Simonson, you know, he's the guy that screwed up. If it wasn't for him, you know, I mean, the Hezekani video really has a bad mistake in it, too, where the wing goes through the wall, and yet there's no damage to the wall. But,
when I was,
I mean, I think that, you know, with Kai Simonson, I think it actually was the pilot that screwed up. I bet you they were in position where they were supposed to be, too early, and then they had to, like, circle around, because I'm sure they planned the position of where they had to be very, very carefully,
yeah.
And but they helicopters cannot hold still. They're always at least drifting very, very slowly. So I'll bet they drifted out of place, and then they had to circle around and come back to where they were supposed to be, and that's right when Jim Ryan said, as you look at the scene from our chopper now arriving at the scene, and they show this big wide shot, and there's no plane! And then Kai Simons was like, oh no, no! No, no, it's too soon! Wait a minute, wait a minute! You know, and he's like trying to get the shot. And the other thing is, I'll bet they had the shot set up to where the whole left half of the screen was windowed out. They had like a wipe, you know, when you see a transition from one scene to the next and they just wipe from left to right. I bet you they had a wipe that was halfway across the screen and had it planned to where they put the South Tower right in the middle of the shot. That way, if the plane comes across, then it can go as far as it wants because the whole left side of the screen, it erases the plane and it's no problem. But as they sat there and drifted and the camera drifted, if you mark exactly where the center of the screen is, and this is actually something that Simon Shack gets semi-right, the plane never really goes past halfway, but the tower drifts just enough and the camera drifts just enough to where the tower goes to the right of the center point, and I think that's exactly what happened.
Enough to let that nose come out.
Say what? You broke up a little bit. Say what?
Oh, enough to let that nose come out.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But the strange thing about him was, too, is he said he never even saw the plane. He said the pilot had saw the plane, so he just started to zoom in, which is kind of strange.
Which makes no sense.
Yeah.
The pilot would see, first of all, the pilot's looking that way, they're facing that way, that plane would have been off to his right and visible for 20 seconds or more.
Yeah, at least, yeah.
Okay? And you know, these are experienced pilot, an experienced camera operator and reporter. The most natural thing to do is, oh, plane? Whoa, okay, and to focus on the plane, not the smoking tower that we've already been looking at for 15 minutes, you know, and nobody, none of the live shots anyway, followed the plane. And the most natural thing to do is to follow the plane. And almost none of the 40 videos follow the plane. Park Foreman is an exception.
Yeah, and it's very smooth when he's following that plane.
Right, and it's extremely smooth. The panning of his camera from left to right in the Park Foreman video is so smooth that it's suspiciously smooth. And because it's just, even on a tripod, it's very, very hard to follow the motion of something unexpected like that.
Yeah, the plane centered. It's the plane centered in that shot all the way through.
Right, and what makes much more sense to me in trying to explain that particular shot is that it was shot with no camera motion whatsoever in high definition, either perhaps on film, maybe, on motion picture film, or on high definition video, on a tripod, no movement, just framed the tower over on the right side and the whole rest of that skyline over on the left side, and just left it there perfectly steady. Then, once you have a perfectly steady shot, it's very, very easy to overlay the airplane, a steady airplane image, boom, mask out. There's a couple of buildings that it goes behind, so you have to mask that out. That's easy enough. Then you can put your artificial camera movement in there by cropping it down to standard definition size, and just following the plane around. I mean, that's just a standard thing to do. And then there's focusing and some motion blur, which again are standard plugins in video software, just to make it look good. Just defocus here a little bit and put a little motion. Actually, motion blur, when you move the virtual camera, that you can check off that, you know, for the software to do that automatically. It just automatically puts the motion blur in. So I'm pretty sure that's how they did that shot.
So they'd have to, like, yeah, when they put that plane in, it would have to be a layer, right?
Yeah, video compositing is done in layers, which is what sort of pisses me off about Simon Shack and the others calling this total animation theory layering.
So the whole plane, the plane would be a layer, and then the whole real city part of it, say, would be another layer.
Correct.
You couldn't break up.
Video compositing is done in layers. The airplane is rendered ahead of time, and it could be done after the fact, just depending on your time factor, but it is... exists on a layer that's otherwise transparent. It's just an airplane flying across a transparent layer.
Like, say, the Hezarkhani shot. There's no way to break up, say, the Trade Center towers and then that building, the brown building to the left. Like, they would all be one layer, right?
That would all be one layer. If you had...
And so for the airplane to be able to go in the building...
Say what?
For the airplane to be able to go in the building, like in the Hezarkhani shot, the plane layer would have to be kind of behind the city layer.
Well,
like what I was getting at with...
I think in the Hezarkhani shot, there's like that one sort of reddish-brown building that a little tiny piece of the wing goes behind.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
Right. You basically, you either... you have to draw a distinction between doing something live and doing it edited, and the Hezarkhani shot was edited. In editing a shot like that, you would first just put the plane in, flying across and going into the building, and it would appear to be on top of everything. It's very, very easy to make it look like it's going on top of everything.
Yeah.
Then, where it goes in front of that building and it's supposed to go behind the building, well, you need to erase the wing as it goes across that building. And you just do that with a mask. And if you've got the time, you can just simply draw a mask, which is just like drawing a shape on the screen and say, okay, you know, erase this here. And you just trace the outline of that building and voila, right there where that building is, the airplane becomes transparent.
Yeah.
So now, if you need to try to do that in real time, that's different. If you want to do that in real time, hang on one second. Let me see. This might be my wife calling me.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, it is. Hold on one second, Jeff.
Sure.
Hello? Hello? Yeah, sorry. I was talking to Jeff. Well, she's finished her homework. And since I've been talking to Jeff, I don't know, but she finished her homework. Pizza. Okay, on violin. Okay. Very good. Okay. All right. Will do. Okay, Jeff, I'm back.
Hey.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so you noticed that in the Hezarkhani shot, too, how the wing goes behind the building when it should be going, passing by in front of it, eh?
No, I think it's supposed to go behind it.
That's it is?
Yeah. What is it, the Downtown Athletic Club? I think, building, and
okay.
No, it's...
Because I was slow-motioning that back and forth there for a while, and it's like, I don't know. But I didn't bother with that.
It's supposed to be behind. They didn't screw up that bad, nor would they. I mean, you know, nor would they. I mean, we got to understand that, you know, they're not going to get amateurs to do this. They're going to get,
right.
You know, it's going to be the best.
And then, well, the explosion after the plane goes in the Hezarkhani shot, like you see, well, it looks to me like there's a whole bunch of those little white puffballs that make the explosion up. Like, you see a slow motion, you see all these little puffballs coming, and not one. You got the ones, the one up and down on the right side where it's like three floors too low or something.
Yeah, that, you know, that's interesting whether all those are real. I think, you know, later on when they blow up the whole building, basically the whole building turns into puffballs.
Yeah.
We see the steel, all of the steel from the building, it just gives off and appears to just disintegrate into expanding white clouds of whatever.
Yeah.
Very interesting. As far as I know, nobody really knows what this is. It's got to be some kind of nuclear reaction or antimatter or something. I don't pretend to know exactly what it is, but they took something off the shelf. Now, in Hezrakani, so we see, you know, both of the engines, where the engines appear to go into the wall, turn into these white puffballs, and then there's all these little puffballs where the wings go in.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of that is real. There's definitely like a real explosion that causes the plane-shaped hole to occur in the side of the building. But I also think that some of that was overlaid and is fake, just to cover up where the you know, where the digital airplane goes, you know, into the wall. What exactly is what? It's hard to tell because it's just white puffballs, and it's easy enough to just mush stuff together and blend the fake with the real. But I mean, the explosion in the tower in general was very real. But if you look, what comes out of the west side of that south tower and the south side of the south tower is this big orange and black fireball. But what comes out of the south tower, I'm not sure if I said it right, but what comes out of the south side where the plane appeared to hit is like this white stuff. It's a different,
It looks like a white rumbling of all this, yeah.
You know,
it's a different coloring than, it's like a lot whiter than it is on the side of the building where you see the other explosion, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it that side where the plane goes in and then this explosion, I mean, it's so weird how a plane goes in, but the explosion comes out pretty much equally from all sides, which if it was a real plane, the momentum would so carry it in the direction that the plane was going. I just don't think there would be very much coming out of the side where the plane went in at all. But it's so different looking. It's so white, and it looks so much like what happens to the whole tower an hour later. You know, that they have something that we don't know about, some kind of explosive something that basically annihilates steel and concrete and other stuff, but
yeah,
it turns steel into dust. And I don't know what it is.
And that's a lot of people argue the thing about how the steel beams could be bent inward if the explosion was internal.
Right, and that's a great thing, but it's an interesting point. But if the floor assemblies spanned between the perimeter of that building and the core, and if you remove the support from underneath the floor assemblies, the floors will sag down, and this will create a tremendous inward pull, a pull between the perimeter and the core. And they did that trick later on, and photographs show it. Just before they blew up the South Tower, there was this tremendous inward pull. They had all these perimeters.
Yeah, right on that corner, right?
Right. Well, different places, but bowing inward. And then what, you know, the official story is, well, we had these super hot fires, and it was weakening the trusses, and the floors were sagging, and it was pulling inward. Well, it's kind of true. It wasn't fires. It was some kind of incendiaries melting away the floor trusses so that the floors would sag. But indeed, that will cause a pull between the core and the perimeter columns. They'll pull inward. So I think they did that same trick with the airplane stunt, took away that floor truss, which caused that inward pull, which caused those columns to bend inwards. But if you look at, you know, there's a few columns bending inwards, but there's a whole lot of stuff blown outwards also. Now, all those aluminum cladding pieces are blown outwards, and there's, you know, all kinds of dust and stuff blowing outwards, and there's all kinds of stuff falling down on the side where the plane supposedly went in. There's all kinds of stuff blowing outwards. So there's no question in my mind that there was a big explosion outwards, and they had a trick to bend a couple of columns inwards.
Yeah, that kind of explains a lot about the inward bending. What
yeah,
you said there, yeah.
I think, as far as I know,
mm-hmm.
you know,
so,
look at all these people.
someone was telling me about how they know a fireman that was down there that day, and he had said he had found like people in a fire truck, and it was just skeletal remains, whatever.
I'll bet that's true.
Whatever it was, like it just melted the skin right off them and everything, and it was just skeletal remains left. Like
I
after
think,
the towers.
No, I don't think. I know for a fact that there was tremendous heat when those, you know, when they blew those buildings up. And this is one of the big lies that Judy Wood.
Yeah, she's saying no heat, right?
She's saying no significant heat. And most of the videos of the demolitions are zoomed in enough to where you really don't see what's happening above the towers. But I found one, CBS video, and I posted it on my YouTube, where if you look, and this is the North Tower event, you look above that tower, and there's a large smoke cloud that when that building starts to disintegrate, this big cloud of smoke not only goes up, but also expands outwards in all directions, like a mushroom cloud,
yeah.
even against the wind. This particular video is looking north to south.
Against the
wind. The wind was blowing west to east, so that would be right to left in this particular video, and it expands to the right, which is against the wind. And there's only one explanation for that, and that is this tremendous heat energy that's expanding and driving that particular phenomena. And of course, the dust tsunami, you know, the so-called pyroclastic flows, whatever, you know, the buildings turned into dust and then they expanded to 3, 4, 5 times their original size, you know, and covered lower Manhattan. The only explanation for that is tremendous heat energy. It's like a pressurization. It's like an aerosol can.
Well, then people argue when they got caught in that cloud of dust and stuff that they should have been burned up or something. But
your guy in the fire truck or the whatever the fireman saw.
Yeah, they were really close, I'd imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. Expansion is cooling. It's the same thing. Scientists will say pressure and temperature are directly proportional. So the more that cloud expands, the cooler it gets. So by the time
they got
to where the people were running, I mean, remember, by the time those buildings blew up, most of the people were already back a reasonable distance.
Yeah, so by the time it, like, flowed down a couple blocks, and it would have been, the heat would have been a lot different.
Hot, but not going to kill you. And that's what everybody said. Everybody said it was hot. It was warm. People were picked up and swept away.
Yeah, that's like David Hanchu said, that he was picked up in the air and thrown a block's distance in the air.
Okay, so that's an amazing amount of pressure. Okay, that's just, amazing. And if there were actual, you know, real nuclear scientists who wanted to study this, they could calculate the temperature necessary to cause that effect. And they could estimate it, and they could tell you, if it's this temperature and this pressure where David Hanchu was, then it must have been this temperature back then. I can't do that. I'm a musician who knows a lot about video. I don't know how to calculate that, but I do know that there's guys who could calculate that,
yeah.
And I do know that they're not doing this.
And it would have something to do with the pressure. The pressure could do that.
Oh, yeah, but it is proof of tremendous temperature. Temperature and pressure basically are the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And it is proof that, you know, the a twin tower can only have, on average, one gravity worth of pressure. That, you know, if it starts collapsing, the pressure underneath where it's collapsing could increase to greater than one gravity, but the air pressure above where that was happening would be correspondingly less than one gravity. And the average could only be 1G worth of pressure. Hang on 1 second, my little one's calling. Yes, little one? What? Like is L-I-K-E. Okay, I'm back, Jeff. Yeah, so, you know, and which makes me wonder about Jim Hofmann. And Jim Hofmann, years ago, I think in 03 or 04, did a great study where he calculated the amount of energy that would be required to expand the dust cloud of the North Tower, and he figured out that it would be 10 times more energy than what was available due to gravity alone. It was absolutely brilliant, absolutely correct. But then, Mr. Hofmann did like updated version of his paper, where he said, you know, "Oops, I made a mistake. Oops, I don't know. Oops, I'm not sure." You know, I forget exactly what he said, but it was basically, "Well, actually, you know, I can't really conclude that, and this is the most, you know," and just left it at that, and never updated his paper again. And of course, Hofmann is, you know, famous for upholding the plane hoax. And now, you know, he used to talk to me. I corresponded with him quite a bit 2.5-3 years ago, and then nothing. He won't answer my emails at all anymore. And so, and of course, he did work for the NSA, and so it's very. I think what's going on with Jim Hofmann was he co-opted that line of research. And I think this is going to hold true over and over and over and over again with different people, is that they'll go in and take a particular line of research, do something with it, make all the honest truth seekers say, "All right, you know, he's doing it, he's going to figure it out."
Yeah.
Grab that piece of research, do something good, and then spin it off into nowhere land, which is exactly what Hofmann did with his expansion of the dust cloud. It's exactly what Stephen Jones did with molten metal. Stephen Jones comes on the scene, molten metal, flowing in pools, does all this stuff, and then he does his dust analysis, and he finds little teeny tiny bits of little spheres of molten metal, which actually, honestly, could be explained innocently by cutting torches and other things. And then he files his lawsuit, and the words molten metal is not even in there. What? What? Stephen Jones files a lawsuit against NIST, and molten metal is not even in there? You know, it's just over and over and over again, you know. And then Judy Wood, you know, it's like Judy does the best job of actually showing the people the evidence. Twin Towers turned into dust, yes.
Yeah, like supposedly she has a lot of credentials where she's the best qualified to be able to make those observations or something.
Yeah, and yet when Jared Holmgren begs her, basically down on his knees, "Please, you're the mechanical engineer, Judy Wood. Please, do some calculations about an airplane hitting a steel building," and she won't do it. And yet, we know there's molten metal.
What, she's not on, she's still saying planes could have hit the building? Or?
No, well, that's a very interesting question.
Actually, I don't think I've ever heard her say one way or the other. Now that I think
It's okay. Now I know Judy very well. I was in very, very tight with those people for a long time. By those people, I mean Judy Wood, Morgan Reynolds, and Jerry Leiphart, and Jim Fetzer. She is, you know, officially a no-planer, about the most she's ever really published is a little bit about how the section of fuselage that was photographed on the top of WTC-5, I think it was.
Well, how it appeared later on?
It appeared later on, right. And that's interesting, and, you know, about how the landing gear that was photographed, it happened to be underneath a tarp, you know. So, yeah, that's suspicious, but that's about all she's really said. Yeah, she's officially a no-planer.
Well, I know she does a lot of stuff with Andrew Johnson, and Andrew Johnson specifically stated many times that there was no planes that hit the building.
Right. But who's Andrew Johnson? He's the guy with the website. You know, Morgan Reynolds, great, fantastic, makes the physics argument.
But he's an economist.
Yeah. And Judy Wood is a PhD mechanical engineer and materials science specialist. If she were to come out with calculations and statements, it would actually have weight because she's a PhD, and she won't do it. And number of other things that are really troubling about Judy Wood. One is the no heat thing when, you know, you look at her website, and she's got more pictures and more videos than anyone. And yet, the video that I described to you a few minutes ago, the CBS video that shows the mushroom cloud expanding against the wind,
That's not
on her site anywhere, okay? The molten metal video, of course, she's trying to convince us there was no molten metal. Now, I don't know about, you know, basements full of molten metal. There probably weren't. She's probably right about that.
Well, it does have that.
There absolutely was molten metal pouring out of that building. Her and Morgan Reynolds called me on the telephone almost exactly a year ago today and tried to convince me that was a fake video. Okay, and now that gets into my area of expertise, video. That video that shows that molten metal, it's impossible to composite and to fake that particular video because the camera's moving around. No way. There was molten metal. We weren't supposed to see it. That's a real video. You know, there's...
And that video came from Camera Planet.
Right. You know, and also ABC. There's the Camera Planet one, and there's also ABC archive footage. So it's similar kind of thing.
Okay.
And, after the fact, could you fake a video like that? Yeah, be tricky, you could. You could not do it in real time. I believe that video is absolutely real, you know, with the metal splashing off the side of that building. Oh, come on. And it's white hot. And the whole fight, if you remember 2 years ago or 3 years ago, whenever it was, about between Judy Wood and Stephen Jones, the whole first thing they got into when the whole Scholars for 9/11 Truth was first off the ground,
mm-hmm.
The very first thing they launched into was, does aluminum glow? If you remember that, Judy did experiments and Stephen Jones did experiments about, does aluminum glow when it's heated up? And Jones said no, and Judy Wood said yes. And of course, on that, Judy Wood is right. She's correct. Of course aluminum glows when you heat it up. And the idea was to let Judy be right, to let Jones be wrong, so that the official guys, the government guys, could turn around and claim that that molten metal flowing out of the tower was actually aluminum. See? It's brilliant. Oh, it was from the airplane. It was aluminum, which cannot possibly be true because regardless of whatever metal it was 2,000 degrees because it was white. It's yellow and white, and we can tell the temperature of molten metal by its color. See? So, but Judy and Jones got us worrying about whether it's aluminum or steel or iron or whatever it is, and not about the temperature, you know. So it as far as I can tell, it's been this whole show. It's been this psychological operation, this psy opera that's been performed for us, and we need to give them all a round of applause. Judy, no, we do. It's Judy, and it's Jones, and it's and it's Maida Sozin, and it's the pilots for 9/11 Truth, and it's Jim Hoffman, and it's all of them. The only thing that makes any sense, and it's David Ray Griffin. My God, he's like the one of the funniest ones. I mean, nobody can be funnier than Maida Sozin, probably, but David Ray Griffin, what's his deal? You know, he does a great job of explaining how the official story is false, but then have you heard his other speeches where he's pushing for one world government? Well, it's like, okay, so even if I follow you, David Ray Griffin, then you're going to lead me to the New World Order, which is exactly what they all want anyway.
Yeah.
And so that's the whole thing. That's the whole strategy, is split everybody into all these groups. Okay, we got the no planers and the planers. We got thermite, we got directed energy weapons, we got conventional weapons, we got vibration, sound, you know, wave theory, whatever. It's everything. We've got no planers and total animation and layering theory and video compositing. Split everybody into as many groups as possible, then spin them off into la-la land with whatever diversion and nonsense that you can, and then, if possible, convince them that the solution to their problem is one world government anyway. That's the whole thing, and it's working, huh? It's working.
Well, as far as, like, the plane, like, say, the videos of the planes, are you on the impression that all those people that took those videos know something and they're not saying it?
Nothing else makes sense. Nothing else makes sense. I work backwards from the live video. I know that Chopper 5 is a video composite because there's no plane in the wide shot because they let the nose come out and the other things, the unstable motion. And I know that Hezrakani, which is edited, is a video composite because the wing goes past the wall and yet there's no damage. And we know there's enough video resolution to see the damage if it was present. So I know for a fact that those two, one live, one edited, are video composites. Mm-hmm. Understanding then the limitations of live compositing, I know that it's not possible to put an airplane image across any kind of flying object at all and cover it up in real time. It is possible, but not in real time. So in working the next step, I know that there was no flying object. So I know there was nothing hit those towers. They just blew up. And then I look at and listen to all of the different people who were there, who saw it with their eyes, and who said it just blew up. From David Hanshew, Don Daler, Winston Mitchell, the other guy, the Middle Eastern guy, and others. There's people who said I saw a plane, but I don't believe them because I know.
Or they could have saw that white elephant flying by.
Huh?
They could have saw a plane fly by.
They could have, you know, that other plane. I mean, there's one firefighter who said he saw something come down the Hudson River and turn around. But, you know, the alleged flight path of UA-175 was way out over New Jersey. It was nowhere near the Hudson River. It was way over there, way, way west. And it would have never been able to see it going south from Manhattan. There's no way. So, yeah, to answer your question, nothing else makes any sense to me other than that the people who say they saw an airplane are either lying or mistaken. And mistaken is a big one. People, fabricate memories in their mind all the time, every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way the human mind works. The human mind is set up to fill in missing details. And, you know, if you see a big explosion and then you see a fire and a big hole in the side of a building and maybe you hear a big sound, it's logical. And then, you know, people are telling you, yeah, I saw a plane on television. It's logical, you know, for your mind to fill in the details, you know. And we know from...
Well, like, for instance, Hezer Connie's video, we know when we watch that plane go into the building that that is not real. There's no question about it, that's not real.
It cannot, it possibly, when you look at the right wing of that airplane, it passes the wall, and you have to look at every single image. There's one video field where the right wing is past the wall, and there's no damage visible to the wall. It's absolutely impossible. It's impossible. There's no question. A real airplane, parts of it might break through, but other parts would explode. Parts would bounce off. The tail would probably bounce off. Stuff would go to the ground. Other parts, you know, you'd see physics. You'd see stuff twisting, turning. You'd see stuff. It just is completely fake.
So you think, like, could someone take that video into a court of law and say, this is a fake video, there's no way the judge would be able to argue that point, right?
Why we don't have a justice system, we have a power system. I used to think we had some kind of a justice system, but, the judges don't argue, judges just sort of rule on things and set the tone, and,
like any argument.
Judy Wood and Morgan Reynolds brought some lawsuits, and they didn't get a trial. So
yeah, Morgan.
Oh, yeah, they're not gonna. You know what trial? There's not gonna be a trial. You could try. You know,
like all these arguments are all these.
You could ever get that to like a jury of regular people? Absolutely. I mean, if I could ever get up in front of a jury, I would absolutely show them, look, here's the wing, and here's the wall, and there's no damage. It's impossible. I'd show them Chopper 5. Look, here's the wide shot. Here's where the plane should be. It's not there. Off for 5 full seconds. Here's the nose. Yeah, I think regular people absolutely could be convinced, but there's no way it would ever get to any kind of a court of justice. Please. Because, you know, who's the court? It's the government. Okay, they did it. Okay, they're the ones. It's like asking them, it's like going to the media and saying, hey, I have this great video proving no planes and demolition on 9/11. And would you, you know, please put me on there. Do a nice special on me. Do a nice little news feature. They did it. They're not going to put you on TV.
I guess, yeah, that's a good point.
They did it. It's like asking the mafia to prosecute itself.
Well, do you think, like, what's his name, Lauder and Katie Couric, when they were sitting there on 9/11, they knew that they were sitting there lying, and they were just all reading off scripts, right? Like, not everybody knows.
Yeah, I mean, the actual...
Like the producer that's in the room.
Reporters are, their job is to read copy. Right? They're handed pieces of paper and or to have teleprompters that scroll across right underneath the camera. And their job 24/7 or, you know, 5 days a week, whatever, is to read what the teleprompter says.
Mm-hmm.
And or repeat the messages that are coming in their earpiece. And or read the piece of paper that comes across their desk. That's what they do. So, you know, they may not have, you know, been, you know, but some of them, you know, may have. I know there's one, I'm trying to remember, I think it's Fox. I'll have to go and check. But you're just seeing scenes of the first demolition, the South Tower's getting blown up. and you hear there's a male anchor and a female anchor. It's a local, I think it's like local Fox 5 or somebody. And the male anchor is struggling to find the words to describe what he's seeing, because you can just tell he wants to say, looks like somebody blew the hell out of that building. But he doesn't say that. The female anchor is trying to interrupt him, and she's going, the building has collapsed. And then he's trying to say something else, and she's like, collapsed. And then he's trying to say something else, and she's like, building has collapsed, building has collapsed. And it's like, I just know she has the memo in front of her, and he doesn't. And she's scared to death he's going to say the obvious, which is that there's a damn mushroom cloud, and the building just turned into powder. You know, but he doesn't. And, you know, but all throughout, and this is something that Simon Shack has actually done a good job of, throughout 9/11, there's just all these instances of people sounding scripted, you know, just reading off the script.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah. I don't know. I guess the only way that anything's going to, like, happen is if somebody in the know starts to talk.
Yeah, nothing's going to happen. I mean, you know,
one of those people that took a video came out and said, my video's fake, or someone did that to my video, or something to that effect?
Right. What would happen? One of a few things. Either If an agent was able to preempt that, then that person either would be just like killed real quickly, and, you know, would unfortunately commit suicide, or something really bad. Or if they were not able to intercept it, and somebody came out, then they would figure out how to slime that person. And that they would figure out how to make it seem like that person was just trying to make money off of a lie, or, you know what I'm saying? They'd figure it out. They have the information machine. And they, first of all, when you say, that person came out, well, you know, what do you mean by that? You know, well, what could they do? Well, they could go on YouTube, I suppose. They could put up a website. That's about it. They could go on discussion forums. That's about it. They couldn't go on the news. All the news has to do is ignore them. You know, they can't go on, you know. And, you know, when you talk about trying to get a message to millions and millions of people, only the government has that power. There might be people who fit that description that we never even heard of, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I just, for my own personal satisfaction, I just like to know what happened.
Well,
know.
Oh well, me, you know, me too, you know, and you know, and I think, you know, it's I reference Jared Holmgren, you know, often enough, and it's too bad because he hates my guts, you know, but you know, what he said was something like, you know, if the American people wanted the truth, they'd have the truth.
Yeah.
And the sad fact is that...
well, like I said many times over, like, everybody I know knows about 9/11. They don't seem to really care.
Right. That's it. Hang on one second. Oh, I'm gonna wrap up in a second, but my wife just got home. Hang on one second. Hang on, I'm still talking to Jeff. I'll wrap it up in the next, like, 1 minute.
1 minute.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me, and I wanted
We can talk again. I'm sorry to have to cut it off, but my family's home now. I got to do, like, the family thing. But, yeah, it's sad, and you're right. I mean, nobody's ever given me an answer. I talk to my friends and stuff, and, you know, I'm like, look, you know, look at this picture. Look, you know, isn't this a mushroom cloud? And they don't have an answer. People don't believe the official story of 9/11. They support it. There's a big, big difference between supporting the official story and believing it. They don't believe it. They support it because They're afraid that if the truth were to become widely known and discussed, that there would be a revolution, that there would be anarchy, or that there would be some kind of a constitutional crisis. And
end up losing.
I'm actually all for that, but most people are afraid of it.
Well, everybody's too comfortable in their lifestyles right now, it seems.
That's it. That's it, man.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You know, but we can at least we can go through our lives doing the right thing, and the right thing is to bring the truth. And you know, I just want to, you know, before I get off the phone here, you know, I just want to thank you for all the tremendous work that you've done. You know, I've said this to Jim Fetzer a number of times, but you have done just an amazing body of work in all of the people that you've called and asking really what are, you know, are the obvious and right questions to ask these people, but nobody else is doing it. And the fact that you have the courage and the persistence and the stamina to go and just call all these people and ask them and fucking record it is just so beautiful. And I just, you know.
Hopefully I'll get a hold of someone someday that is willing to tell the truth about what happened.
You know, yeah, well, I can promise you I'm telling the truth as I've discovered it, and I'm always willing to stand corrected if there's evidence and something that will change my mind. And I have changed my mind on some things, you know, I'm just trying to do my best.
Okay, well, it was a pleasure talking to you, Ace. I really appreciate all the work you've done, and you've helped me learn a lot from your videos and stuff like that.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. To be continued. I got to get off the phone
right
now.
Yeah, I will talk to you again sometime, and take care.
All right, man.
Bye.